Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, Adarsh Subramanian. He is very much a product guy, and today he's leading product management at Box. Adarsh, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Thomas. Excited to be on the show, and I've been looking forward to it for quite some time now.
Absolutely. Excited to have you. There's a bunch of topics I want to talk about today, but let's first talk about just you and things you would want the audience to know about you and understand about you as a professional and what led to where you are today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been in product for close to a decade now. I primarily found my way from being an engineer. I was very focused on the technical aspects. I saw things as an engineer. I did things as an engineer, but grew into appreciating what it means to apply all of that in a context. And that's where product management occurred as a career trajectory for me. And appreciating people of similar backgrounds like me who do want to venture into technology, but also embrace business problems or day-to-day problems in the world that we're facing with. How can there be a paved path for them to achieve the kind of outcomes that they're aspiring for? So for me, it meant an intersection of my engineering attributes and my business acumen, and thereby finding solutions for problems that I was encountering through my life. I've always been passionate about empowering people around me to think alike and also feel empowered to change the world, right? Go find solutions to the problems that they're encountering. And which is why through my career, I've always built products that regardless of any barriers or technical competence, how can every citizen in the world be empowered to build automation in my case, but for that matter, any software or any automation capability that makes things a lot more productive and makes work a better place to live?
Yeah, absolutely. And on this show, we talk a lot with folks who are product founders and executives who have their tiny micro organizations that they're trying to build up into something big. But then every now and then we talk to someone like yourself who is at a very large established company and then doing product there. And now in your capacity, are you currently operating the new product space? You're under the umbrella of a large company, but do you get to operate in sort of the capacity of something similar kind of to a startup?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, again, one of the things that I look forward to in every role that I take up in my career is that kind of a good balance between being an established shop versus being really scrappy and getting things going from scratch, right? If so far, been very happy with my experience and striking that balance. So I will say yes. In my role, we are actively looking out for that next very idea, which is in its own way or in its own right is the baby in the larger company or the larger context, but nurturing that from all the way from a few lines scribbled on a napkin to actually growing that into a product and taking it out there in the hands of people. That's I would say, pretty much bread and butter for me. There's always phases in the year where we do more of taking care of middle schoolers or high schoolers, but there are also times when you're taking people through kindergarten and the earlier years of a product. It's a mixed bag for sure.
Now, the extent to which you can talk about what are you building at Box?
Yeah. So at Box, for context for the audience, it's known as a leader in enterprise cloud storage, but the company has evolved different eras. And right now being an AI first leader in bringing artificial intelligence to content and how can that be bridged to unlock enterprise productivity around the globe. And within that premise, myself and my teams, we work on how can we best unlock value for the content that our customers entrust us with to keeping it secure, but at the same time, also unlocking like value added services for that content that they entrust us with. So everything from securing your data, ingesting content into a safe and secure place, unlocking business processes that are critical for modern day enterprises. How effectively can we connect the different pieces and also enrich that content with artificial intelligence so that it allows everyone to make the most critical decisions with the least amount of fear and more empowerment. So that's the problem space.
Now, what is a product for someone in your shoes? Now, folks who have worked for Fang, I think this is like overwhelmingly obvious and stuff like
right.
that, but it's not always obvious to everyone. So like Google, everyone knows Google, YouTube and stuff, but there's like hundreds of like little products, things that Google considers to be a product. So give us some examples of, you know, at a place like Box, what is a product?
Yeah, totally. Box is primarily enterprise-centric, which is also why the average person that you meet on the street is probably not talking Box. It's because unlike the other tools that you mentioned, they're more end-user-centric, right? So that's one like caveat to call out. In terms of like use cases or like general paradigms of what does a typical customer for Box look like, I would say we work with close to 70% of Fortune 500 companies. So any company out there in the world that has content as the result of processes or content that is required to undertake certain processes. Now, to be more specific, think about all those different operational units within a modern day enterprise, be it sales operations, marketing operations, people operations. These are all different, like I would say, mature functions that do have processes that are kicked off on a day-to-day basis. Again, drilling down further, if I was to take an example of how does the salesperson of today generate a contract for an enterprise that they're talking to generate a proposal? Now, if we were talking about this 10 years ago, a lot of this would have been either entirely manual or it would have been an amalgamation of different point tools that people are stitching together. So you're kind of switching browser tabs, switching tools, and fulfilling a process. But here comes Box, where it's a one solution, which is a more a horizontal solution that accomplishes end-to-end like processes for the example that I mentioned a few seconds ago.
Yeah, so let's take that example. I think that's a terrific example of the target user being a salesperson for a particular product, and that product's purpose is to help generate contracts. I think that's a really good. So when you're approaching a product like that, you assemble the team, presumably just like a product team, and you view it as a competitor against others in that space specifically, and you're leveraging your overall ecosystem from the broader company and all of the other products. Is that how you approach it? And is that what a product it is to you?
Totally. So we start looking outside in. That's our first like kind of principle. So look outside, look at the market, understand what are the pain points, in this case, the sales teams of today, and what are the different tools that they have at their disposal today that can be bettered. So that's when we tie needs with what's available. But then what makes a company unique is how does it fit into the larger value proposition? So in this case, like the salesperson persona and the contract example, we're not really only solving the contract generation. What we're saying is, hey, you in any case would have generated a contract and you would have entrusted us to store it and save it securely with all the sort of compliance. But guess what? You don't have to use five different tools to do that. We will let you generate it. We will let you secure it. We will let you collaborate with the right stakeholders on it. And we will also help you send it out for signatures to your eventual client so that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So it's more of like, how much can we take over the value chain from start to finish, ending with storage? So that's an example of what we do and my team does specifically at Box.
Okay, so that's a huge differentiation from a lot of products is that you have the strategic advantage of access to the whole and presence in the whole value chain. So you've got link by link. And then so any company starts off with one link, presumably pretty much, right? And then you do a good job at that. And then so you nail that down. So you had a Box, a lot of the ones that people have heard of is Dropbox and maybe Google, Google Storage, Google Drive. So the Box, you did a really good job at what you do. You nail that one down and then you can work out from there and try to get adjacent links. And then It is something like that. And then, so then what do you see as, Adarsh, here's one thing I've always been really interested in, the ways that a large company will artificially simulate the startup situation, right? Because everyone's observed a startup comes out of the blue, they're able to be way more agile than everyone else, and then they pop up out of nowhere and take over this whole area of market share. What are some of the things that where you think it's important to simulate that startup world? And what are some other ways where maybe it's not as important?
Yeah, no, I think it's in today's world, given how the pace at which we're going with the advent of all the new technology, I think we all are like consuming a new startup every day as soon as we log into the internet, right? That's the rate. And it's extremely important for the behemoths to also be very mindful of the fact that if they want to stay ahead in the advantage they've built over the years, they certainly have to think in that very mindset of being agile and open-minded and embracing technology. So things that I have seen across organizations, and I believe this is only going to these, this is more like my look into the future, which is companies are investing, like when I say investing, like real money and resource and time into setting up pseudo startups, if I was to coin that word, within their larger enterprise. It could be an offshoot of hackathons or other experimental competitions that they're running through the year. And off that feeds into a small part of a team that pretty much is working through the incubation of a promising idea, which is thereafter matured the following year and launched as an eventual product. And the good and bad part about this is we only hear of the examples that make it through that process, but there are numerous examples that don't and like exit that funnel, which is a good thing. I think I actually am a huge proponent of that because unless you feed the top of the funnel, you're not getting anything at the bottom of the funnel, right? A lot more organizations are heavily focused on that internal investment. I've seen patterns in hiring. I've seen patterns in thinking. I've seen patterns in prioritizations, which is all telling me that people are more than ever open to having smaller startups within a larger organization. Well, it at the end of the day boils down to the risk averseness of, like, for example, a Fortune 10 company versus a Fortune 500 company. Do they want to protect their differentiation and then focus on R&D, or do they want to go all out and reimagine what the company is in the first place? There is a spectrum of how open companies are, but I would say it's more a question of what percentage of a company is a startup now. And the question is no longer, hey, do you have a startup-like mindset in your enterprise anymore? It's a given. I think everyone's going down that direction. It's just a question of what's your hunger? What's your appetite? How much do you want to take on? It's a very exciting, but a difficult problem for the CEOs and the investors in modern day.
Do they try to simulate the hardship of a startup? And I think there's only to some degree you can really do that. Like a real startup dealing with, are the lights going to be on tomorrow? Whereas you know that the lights are going to be on, you would just get transferred to a different department and if something didn't get off the ground.
True. I think it's largely what you mentioned, but there are also been cases where it depends on how deep you find yourselves in trouble, right? For instance, we've had examples, like I've read a lot about how a company has invested in a team focused on a technology. There were early press releases about a potential product coming out. And then the next thing you know is like the company had to make the unfortunate decision of cutting costs for about 500 or 600 people, right? That does happen, but more often than not, in the spirit of wanting to take risks, being experimental, fail fast and learn, I would say it's more of, we will find other projects, we will reprioritize our resources, reprioritize our focus, and keep business going as usual. And the drastic measures are not as many, thankfully, but it does happen one-off times for sure.
I recently learned the word in the past couple of months, Sherlocking. What's your opinion on that?
I haven't heard about Sherlocking.
Okay, so I read it like on some LinkedIn post. Apparently it means when, imagine some, you know, this probably applies a little bit less to something like Box and more like a platform like iOS or something like that. But it's where a startup comes out with some functionality and it starts off as a feature, but then it can just get absorbed as a layer. Like, so imagine if you invented some new type of keyboard to type messages on your iPhone. And then if it got really popular, then all Apple has to do is just repeat it and then build it, and you're instantly out of business. So is that, you wouldn't be allowed to divulge kind of strategic stuff, but just overall have the perspective of the big company just gobbles up functionality that is the whole startup, but it's just for you. It's just a one piece of functionality.
Yeah. I would say, fair point. And now that you describe it, yeah, certainly do relate to that, the trends that we see. In some ways, I would say no good idea goes uncopied. So if there is a bigger company copies like the keyboard or like maybe a camera enhancement or a filter, I think that's a huge validation for the people who thought about it in the first place, that it's a promising feature or product. But yes, to your point, yes, it does happen. But that's also where like a lot of that strategic context or the environment that we briefly discussed a few minutes ago is extremely important. It's not so, I mean, we both, I'm sure like a lot of us will relate to, there are many video conferencing tools out there today. Like COVID happened, there's like a huge exponential increase and everybody's doing video digital collaboration, but there is a reason why only a few still stick around or hang around. Now that's because there's the strategic, I would say, weight around it that's made it compelling for like retention and for people to continue using it. I know I've myself used apps that were more like party games that you could play on your phone when we were all locked down in our respective apartments or homes. I would engage with my friends because we were quarantining and we would play games and all of that. All well and good, but 4 years hence, like nobody talks about it. And we don't know about, I don't even know if it's listed on the App Store anymore. So there is a little bit of being opportunistic and finding some traction. But if you want to play the long game, if you want to play the 60 lap Formula One race, then I think you got to have a lot more strategic weight around what you're envisioning. So you may copy an idea because it might be the most relevant thing on a given day. But if you don't have like thinking ahead, I think it doesn't have a long shelf life.
Gotcha. You've got to think around it and not just copy things. That makes sense. So to a listener who wants to have more of a career in be a product manager who works at a place like Box, and they want to be able to be successful and productive, what kinds of things should they be thinking about in terms of skill development and just where they grow?
Yeah, I would say the very first thing as a PM is trying to build that empathy for problems that people face around you. It doesn't have to get, so many times when I'm asked this question, most people are expecting me to say AI. I will say that. But so the kind of skill, it's very important, a very relevant skill. I'll get to that. But I think what's important is a lot of product management is thinking and then bringing the technology or the skill and applying it on top of it. So understanding things like consumer psychology, human psychology, reading patterns in everyday life, having empathy for like the people around you. They may not be like experiencing a problem to your naked eye, but is there a way that you can reduce their effort that they're doing to accomplish an outcome? So if you had to choose between two buttons for an elevator, going up versus going down, people are not complaining about it, but is there a solution that is better than that? So I think that those are the skills or the ability that are very fundamental for a PM. And on top of that comes like being able to like have a conversation, like I said, drilling down into the aspects of empathy and understanding pain points. You'd certainly need to be able to be a patient listener, be articulate in like in your communication of what you're trying to get across. Then of course, there is the corporate jargon or like the typically skills such as, you need to manage your stakeholders, you need to be able to prioritize. But those are all things that I believe will come with time, because when you're invested in a problem, and more often than not, you will have numerous solutions for that problem because you're so excited about it. Automatically, that feeds into, okay, now I need to pick one. So that's prioritization. Then you're like, okay, I need to go. Did I make the right decision? So you're then doing user testing or user validation. That's another skill. Then you're like, hey, if I fail, the next time I go pitch a solution, I need to have some backing. So that's stakeholder management. So I think those are things that would naturally flow in as a PM. But what's hard to nail, are you truly understanding the problem? Is there a problem? Are people complaining about it, or are people suffering in silence? Those are the aspects that I typically encourage like aspiring product managers to focus on. And most of the times it's not reading a book, it's not doing a course, it's just being observant, being aware of your surroundings. There are a lot of opportunities around us. And now is when I will say, where does AI fit in? So a lot of the means to getting work done, there is huge opportunity to be more productive with the application of AI. So if it took us as PMs, if it took us 3 days to write a document on a proposal, with AI, we're talking 30 minutes. The ability to experiment has grown exponentially with the advent of AI. So having that know-how of leveraging AI to maximize PM productivity, I think that's also a very important skill that is very relevant today as we speak in the current market, but also for anybody who is venturing into product management, I would definitely learn the ropes there as well.
Terrific, terrific. And for folks thinking about just Box, just presenting Box for a second, what should people be excited about from coming from Box in the near future?
No, Box is it's a unique situation where, as I mentioned, we have troves of unstructured content that leading organizations around the world have entrusted us with. And with our AI first mindset, we are very, I would say, in a very much in a differentiation and also a unique value prop. We are unlocking insights that enterprises never had before. We are making enterprises more productive with more streamlined workflows or processes that I mentioned. And imagine, most enterprises were sitting on this content, which was just on the shelf, but now it's going to speak very key insights. It's going to scream out, hey, I'm this contract that is worth $1 million that's been sitting on the on your shelf, and I'm going to let you know proactively it's time for a renewal. It's time for you to take an action on me, as opposed to somebody actually pulling it out of the shelf, dusting it off, maybe get to the point where they are renewing it manually. All of that is automated. So for Box, I would say it's an intelligent content management platform with a lot of differentiation with AI, unlocking insights on content and also workflows. So very exciting times.
In an intelligent content management platform. I love that take on what Box is. That's brilliant. Adarsh Subramanian, ladies and gentlemen, is who we've been talking to. Where can folks find you? And are you writing stuff or are you just...
Yeah, certainly. Do follow my LinkedIn feed. I do try to chime in with my thought leadership there when possible. I love Discord. I love Reddit. So I'm on Reddit all the time. Again, this is probably my PM first or product first thinking. I feel like a lot of the unstructured or formal forums seem to have a lot of the actual problems. So I'm gravitating and I'm finding myself more in the Discords and the Reddits of the world, mainly because people are very vocal. People are very transparent about their problems and the challenges that they're facing, both professionally and on a personal capacity. Certainly tune in there. I've also started writing. So look out for some blogs, look out for some content from my end as well. Thanks to, again, here's where AI has played a huge role in my life as well, greatly helping me produce more content, helping me tailor to my audience. Watch out and hopefully... I will hear writing a commentary and also thoughts from a lot of this audience as well.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing more from you and hopefully everybody checks that out. Adarsh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Thomas. Great talking to you and also the broader audience here. Very exciting time. And I'm sure this podcast will feature many more esteemed guests and a lot of inspiration for the community out there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.